Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The Human Zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Stand to attention when I'm talking to you!
On Talk Radio.
Yes, mess!
Good morning and welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. We have reached the end of yet another tumultuous week. Boris Johnson, it would appear, is edging ever closer to becoming the next Prime Minister, the fifth Prime Minister of this country in this century, by the way, and possibly the greatest. You never know. He's up against Tony Blair, he's up against Gordon Brown, he's up against David Cameron, and he's up against Theresa May. Now that, I would have to say, is a prime ministerial opportunity. Now Boris Johnson, of course, will tell you that he was destined to become the leader of this great nation of ours. That he went to school and he was made Prime Minister when he was about the age of 11. Now, some people don't like Boris Johnson. Some people think he's a bit of a bully. Some people think he's a bit of a misogynist. Some people think that he's a bit of a racist. Lots of people don't really know Boris Johnson. They just know what his image is. I think he's a lot cleverer than we give him credit for, and I think he's a lot less spontaneous than we suspect that he is as well. Coming up in this hour, we're going to talk to Ross Kempsall, our political editor, who's going to look forward to Boris's big week coming up, because only yesterday, the parliamentarians once again tried to stymie the will of the people. They've tried to make it more difficult for Boris to have a no-deal Brexit. Whether they succeed in that is another matter, but what we do know is that more than likely on 11 o'clock on Tuesday morning on this very show, we should be able to declare who the next Prime Minister is. And I'd be astonished if it is not Boris Johnson. 0344 499 1000. We've got loads more of your calls to take on lawless Britain, Wild West Britain, why it's possible for these kids to drive up and down at high speed on the streets of our country without fear or favour or without worrying about getting arrested by the police. It seems absolutely extraordinary. Coming up later on, of course, it is Friday, so we will be doing the Perrier Awards, but not in the normal way. I'm looking forward to it greatly. I'm sure it's going to be very different, slightly different style for you, and we'll tell you all about that coming up. 0344 499 1000. You'll listen to me, Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So, quite an interesting time, isn't it, in the public world of politics? We've got three, count them, at the very least, current cabinet ministers supposedly writing their letters of resignation. We are going to be preparing for you. Oh, there we go. I was about to say we're going to be preparing for you the alarm that goes off whenever anybody resigns. That's the resignation klaxon. I can tell you that nobody's actually resigned yet. That is, in fact, a test. I'm hoping that's the case anyway, because I think Ross Kempsall's planning to resign anytime soon. Ross, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike.
Now, we're going to be oiling up the resignation klaxon. I think it's going to be in heavy usage over the course of the next few days, the early part of next week. After what happened yesterday in Parliament, which I suppose wasn't an incredible surprise, it's going to be slightly trickier for Boris next week, isn't it?
Oh, next week is just going to be blockbuster. I can hardly contain my excitement as we go into the weekend.
Yes.
And the reason for that is that pretty much 24/7 next week, it will be full-on absolute constitutional level political drama. And the reason for that is that we expect Boris Johnson, who, as you said, has wanted to be Prime Minister since he was a young man, is going to emerge finally after decades and decades of manoeuvring. Imagine everything we know about Boris Johnson, his time as Mayor of London, his time in Parliament, all of that familiarity is suddenly going to be thrust into the most difficult job in British politics. And I think the big question really is, why is Boris Johnson about to start a job which pretty much embodies everything that he hates? It's pretty much the opposite of his character and personality. As a Prime Minister, you have to be quite restricted. You have to be decisive. You have to be tough. You have to go into endless difficult decisions and negotiations. I'm not saying Boris Johnson can't do that or isn't prepared for that, but it's not exactly a job which is imbued with levity and jokes. It's a 24/7 high wire act, and it's going to be even more critical going into October. So it's just going to be extraordinary. And I think it really will be like having a completely different type of Prime Minister, not just having a new Prime Minister. I think if Boris Johnson really does become Prime Minister next week, and we can't rule out an incredible upset, and what a story that would be if Jeremy Hunt turned out to do better than everybody expected. But if Boris Johnson walks into number 10 on Wednesday, the whole of the office of Prime Minister is changing, not just the actual person who holds it.
And interesting that you make that comparison between what he's always wanted and the fact that sometimes when you get what you want, you realise actually you didn't really want it in the first place. But I do wonder whether he's going to cross the threshold, as it were, and stand in the hallway of Downing Street and go, I've done it. And then to sort of wonder what on earth he does next, because he has got a bit of a track record of being an administrator, and he was very much a successful mayor of London. Even those of his detractors would admit that he did a pretty good job running the mayor's office, didn't he?
Right. So there are two things you need to know about Boris Johnson, and I was having a chat with some people who've worked with him this morning. The first is that he likes to operate by having good people around him who make a lot of the day-to-day decisions. So much of City Hall was run by competent people who he appointed, like Sir Edward Lister, for example, who is going to be his chief of staff in Downing Street, like Muneera Mirza, who's going to be the head of policy in Downing Street. So he's bringing some of his successful City Hall team with him. Secondly, Boris Johnson is a complete loose cannon and will do things in his own way. So he will get a good team around him, and that will be a huge amount of the focus of next week, is what he will try to do. But also, it's completely unpredictable. He could really make politics very, very spontaneous.
Yes, I think he could. And that will lead it to very interesting places for the likes of you and I. The question will be, what does he respond to Parliament with? Because he won't be happy, presumably, with what happened yesterday when the Dominic Grieve-style amendment went through, which made it much more difficult for him to have a no-deal Brexit. You explained it to us very well just before the show ended yesterday, that it was a kind of Northern Irish sort of hidden agenda, which actually meant that the no-deal Brexit was going to be much more difficult. Is he currently planning to somehow get around that, do you think?
This is a guy who, when he was asked what he wanted to do when he was a child, replied that he wanted to be world king. And I think walking into number 10 Downing Street on Wednesday is that moment for Boris Johnson that he's wanted since he was 6 years old.
Yeah.
It is the chance where he thinks, in his mind, he's going to be world king. So I don't think he's going to find himself psychologically limited by what the House of Commons did yesterday. Now, whether he finds himself practically limited, I mean, that is an open question. But I understand that it looks like Nicky da Costa, who at the moment is a kind of commentator on legislative matters, the former Director of Legislative Affairs in Number 10, is going back into Number 10 next week to work with Boris Johnson, although that's not confirmed. If that's the case, she is one of the most competent parliamentary operators, one of the most sophisticated users of parliamentary procedure, who understands it like no one else. So Boris Johnson, as I said, is getting people around him who may very well be able to help him negotiate some of these strictures which MPs are going to put on him. But yes, they're definitely going to try to do so. They're definitely going to try to limit...
Oh, hang on, there's another sound. Now, this sound I haven't heard before. I'm not sure what this is. This, I'm told, this is being prepared for next week. This, I'm told, is the sound of somebody actually quitting... being fired. Not the resignation klaxon. This is the being fired klaxon. So if anybody gets fired before they quit, that's the noise you're going to hear. Okay?
Right, okay. So, well, I think we need some different noises. I'm not sure who's prepared this. So you're most likely to hear the resignation klaxon from Philip Hammond, from David Gawk, from Rory Stewart, remember, who wanted to be Prime Minister.
Oh, yeah, I've completely forgotten about Rory Stewart. I mean, he's sort of faded away, isn't he?
Well, he's now Secretary of State for International Development. He won't be by next Wednesday, I can promise you that. Mm. The reason is he's writing his own resignation letter as we speak. So you're going to hear the resignation klaxon first. I suppose you might need to keep the firing klaxon up your sleeve.
Yes.
But if any cabinet ministers who see the writing on the wall, they may very well get as far as being fired. But I understand that yesterday, Sir Mark Sedwill, the cabinet secretary, wrote to permanent secretaries in all of the departments telling them to prepare for a full reshuffle to be concluded by Wednesday evening.
Mm.
So that means a very quick reshuffle. That means not dragging it out into 48 hours, which is usually what happens into Thursday and Friday. So you could have the majority of the cabinet positions in place by Wednesday evening, which looks like there's going to be less firing to do.
And what about the resignations? Could they begin as early as Monday, do you think? Or will they wait until he's announced as the winner?
Well, I'm wondering whether you might get them in the Sunday newspapers, actually, if you were going to do it something like this. I would have thought there's going to be a coordinated pitch. Philip Hammond is rumoured to want to stay on until Monday, and one of the reasons for that is that he's finishing some work in the Treasury itself. Of course, he's had a bit of a shot fired across the bow this morning of the Treasury by the Prime Minister insisting on this ending the public sector pay freeze, which technically she did in 2017, but now promising a £20 billion public sector pay rise, where we will see police officers, teachers, etc., get a pay rise which they haven't had since 2013.
But we don't know where that money's coming from at this moment in time, do we?
We're told it's not new money, and this is the kind of fiscal discipline that Philip Hammond has tried to impose on the Treasury. Now, you know, it won't have been done without his connivance, but at the same time, a lot of his legacy is currently being ripped up. Well, I think what you're about to see is just a complete U-turn and shift around about who opposes who. So we're going to get a team of Brexiters.
There's another sound. What's this one now? Oh, this is a shift around alarm. Okay, so now we have a resignation klaxon. We have a firing klaxon. This one we might hear a lot, I suppose, because this will be people changing jobs, right?
Correct. Excellent. Yes, exactly. That is another klaxon that you will need. I'm losing track now of what they all sound like, but that one is going to be very important.
Yeah.
Perfect, because you will have current cabinet ministers who will probably be swapped around into other jobs and may survive the cuts. Boris Johnson won't be bringing in an entirely new team. And this would be a good moment to reflect on whether he decides to try to create some kind of unity cabinet by sacking people and, you know, firing fewer people than expected. What if, for example, he tries to keep a few of his critics in place just to keep them inside the tent?
Yes.
To try to demonstrate that he wants unity. Of course, the most obvious question would be, what is he going to do with Jeremy Hunt? Is he going to keep him as Foreign Secretary? I mean, after this campaign, after how nasty the campaign has been behind the scenes, difficult, but at the same time, if he fires Jeremy Hunt and completely expels him from the cabinet, it does have the reverse effect of potentially looking quite weak.
I think if he keeps him in, he becomes kind of his creature, doesn't he? And of course, in the end, what we both witnessed at that debate that was held here in the News UK building, they seem to have sort of buried the hatchet to some extent, didn't they?
I think Mr. Hunt was doing most of the burying because he realised that maybe the time was up for holding on to a cabinet job. Now, whether he will remain Foreign Secretary, that is, of course, one of the major powers of patronage that Boris Johnson has to appoint the four great offices of state. So if next week you're looking at the Prime Minister, of course, we think will be Boris Johnson, but then you're looking at the Home Secretary, the Foreign Secretary and the Chancellor. Mm. And who is going to be in the Treasury is hugely important. Now, that job is rumoured to have been promised to both Sajid Javid, Liz Truss, Jacob Rees-Mogg and others. Who Boris Johnson makes Chancellor is absolutely critical. Mm. What will he do about a Deputy Prime Minister role? Will he have a formal Deputy Prime Minister? Will he go back to having an informal Deputy Prime Minister like David Lidington continue with that role? We're told that there will be perhaps a combining of several ministries together. But at the same time, Boris Johnson, if he tries to restructure the government, it's left with the problem that he has an awful lot of people he needs to reward. He has a lot of people who've come on board to the campaign. At the moment, people's names like Gavin Williamson and Ian Duncan-Smith are doing the rounds for Deputy Prime Minister, if that's going to be a big role.
Now, that could be very interesting indeed. I think what we're going to need to do now is just for our own purposes and to be prepared for next week, let's have a proper recap of the three sounds, the three klaxons that we're going to fire off. Okay, so here,
absolutely,
first of all, is the klaxon you will hear if anyone has resigned. All right. We know that one, right? Now, the next one, which is slightly less familiar, this is the klaxon for when somebody is fired. It's more of an air raid siren kind of thing, right? I haven't heard that one since Baghdad was under attack. Now, finally, the last sound that you will hear, the last klaxon, is for somebody changing jobs within the cabinet. That one's a bit similar to the second one. I'm told there's a fourth sound. What's the fourth sound?
What's that one?
That's for Jeremy Corbyn getting sacked, apparently. I don't think we'll be hearing that one. But Corbyn is under a bit of pressure from the House of Lords, isn't he?
No, he is. There could very well be a vote of no confidence in Jeremy Corbyn amongst Labour peers.
Wow.
Next week. Now, as if there's not enough going on.
Yeah, really.
And this plays right back directly into, you know, the new Prime Minister, because Boris Johnson, it's thought, would quite like to keep Jeremy Corbyn in place. lots of talk about an autumn election. Mm. In fact, the real discussion in the Conservative Party this morning is who is going to run an election campaign. And if that's the question at the moment, then that points towards some serious thinking being put into an autumn general election. I think Boris Johnson would like more than anything else for Jeremy Corbyn to remain in place. He would relish the competition. A Boris Johnson-Jeremy Corbyn general election would be a blockbuster general election, unlike any other general election in modern British politics. And it's the election that Boris Johnson has kind of pitched his campaign on winning, if you like. The fact that he thinks he could beat Jeremy Corbyn. At the same time, Jeremy Corbyn under huge internal pressure in the Labour Party, but under pressure as well from his own allies on the left of the Labour Party, who know that if Mr. Corbyn resigns and if he goes, and there's no way that actually Labour peers can force him out, there's no technical way that he can actually be removed. But if he does go, then the whole left-wing project of the Labour Party is potentially going to collapse because there's no anointed left-wing successor. You could put money on Rebecca Long-Bailey, John McDonnell, but it's not entirely plausible how they may get through to actually become leader of the Labour Party. So if Jeremy Corbyn goes, then a lot of people around him, a lot of new MPs, a lot of members of his team are going to be really eradicated from Labour politics. If Labour politics switches back to the centre, it would be a massive step change for the Labour Party from where it's gone to. It's been through a huge process of internal change. All of the main roles have now been taken by left-wingers. And if that is destroyed by Jeremy Corbyn resigning, they're not going to be very happy about it.
So I'd be extremely happy about it, however, so that would be great. But what about, as if that's not enough happening, we've also got the potential of a new Lib Dem leader, haven't we, on Monday as well?
Yeah, absolutely. We will find out the results, whether Jo Swinson or Ed Davey become Lib Dem leader. Massively important, actually, undercurrent, because the Lib Dems are still doing extremely well in the polls. And just overnight, the Lib Dems in a council by-election, not very significant because it's only one seat on one council, but took a seat from the Tories overnight. And these are the kind of low-level rumblings which are carrying on and may characterise the next general election. So if you're Boris Johnson and looking at wanting to take the fight to Jeremy Corbyn, yes, that's all very well, but you'll also be taking the fight, don't forget, to the Brexit Party and to the revived, renewed Liberal Democrats with a new leader.
Absolutely right. It's fascinating stuff. Now, you'll be happy to know I've been handed a piece of paper on which these words are written. Talk Radio received more than 300% of its usual Monday evening listeners during the Sun Talk Radio debate, which aired at 7 p.m, and its post-debate coverage with political editor Ross Kempsall. So there you go.
Oh, wow.
So now you're king of the ratings as well.
Wow. I do have to play the
ratings. We may have to get another klaxon for that.
Yeah. I mean, next week, honestly, just stay with us because 24/7 it's going to be blockbuster next week.
It is.
We'll bring you every single jot and tittle as soon as it happens. Reputation now for being first and fast. We will have the absolute finger on the breaking news all the way through next week. I don't think I'm going to be able to sleep all weekend.
It's going to be great.
I'm excited already. Absolutely excited.
It's going to be brilliant. Listen, I can't wait. Ross, thank you very much indeed. I hope the rain stops, though, because we are going to be in the tent of shame. Ross Kempsall, Talk Radio's political editor. What a star that man is. And how brilliantly are we covering this whole thing? I think you don't want to go anywhere else, do you? I can't tell you, because I'm too busy bursting out laughing, who's currently doing a radio show on another station at the moment. 0344 499 1000 is the number. This is Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow Body Set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go Facial Set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.
A mid-morning dance with the devil.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
Watch me strike a match on all my wasted time. As far as I'm concerned, you're just another picture to burn.
Oh, 03444991000. Now, it would be remiss of me not to mention the story that I spotted earlier on today about the lovely Meghan Markle and Prince Harry, who apparently want to spend another 20 grand on some bushes. Apparently, they don't like the garden that they've had reconstructed around Frogmore Cottage at a cost to the taxpayer of around about £2.5 million. And they may now be in breach of the planning applications at Windsor, because the Royal Borough of Windsor and Maidenhead show the Sussex have applied for part retrospective planning consent to the external landscaping works. Now, what that means is they've done something without permission. I bet they get away with it. But 20 grand on some shrubbery, really? For heaven's sake. Now, Grant Harold is here. He's the royal butler. We're not going to talk to him about the royal family today, though. We are, however, going to talk to him about the etiquette of weddings, because this is the wedding season. And for those of you who start going to weddings in your 20s and you start going to all your friends' weddings sort of one after another, it starts to become quite a hectic thing. And so who better to tell you how to behave than Mr. Grant Harold? Grant, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Very well indeed. Welcome back to the show. Haven't spoken to you for a while. Now, a big piece in the Times today that more and more couples getting married are doing something that I'm sure you would approve of, because I do. Don't take your phone into the church. Don't take your phone into the service, wherever it may be, and just let the professionals get on with it.
Yes. And this is, you know, I was at a wedding not that long ago, and it did amaze me at how many mobile devices appeared.
Yeah.
Not only mobile devices, also tablets. That's what the one that kind of shocked me was suddenly. The tablets suddenly appeared as well. And I thought, okay, this is something somewhat different. But, you know, it's a difficult one, because I'm aware that 21st century, we all use our devices, our mobile devices and all the rest of it. But there's occasions, and as I said, at a wedding, it's that time when you're not really supposed to be bringing them out. There's obviously official photographers there. So I know people want to get the odd little snap, but there's a time and place. And I think I'm not against anyone ever trying to take a picture, but it's just got to be at the right moment, at the right time, and not taking a phone call, for example, in the middle of the service.
Which that definitely wouldn't be good. But there is a terrible problem at the moment. I mean, which ranges from really, really serious problems that we've got in society to minor ones. But the number of times now that, say, I get on the bus in the morning and people are talking with headphones in to a microphone on their phone in quite a loud voice, sitting on, and I'm like, why are you doing that? I mean, I would not do that. If somebody calls me and I'm on public transport, I say, look, I'm on the train or on the bus, I'll call you back. I do not involve myself in a long, drawn-out and loud conversation.
This is a really good point, mate, because I was having this conversation the other day. It's the same if you go into a shop. I was in a well-known shop recently, and there was somebody in front of me on the headphones, on the phone, and as they were being served, they carried on the conversation, and the poor lady serving was
so rude,
trying to ask questions. It was really rude, and I felt really sorry for the lady. It was a youngster. We obviously had no idea of what they were doing. They obviously thought it was fine, and it really isn't, because it's rude. It's not respected to the other person, and I'm aware that sometimes you can go into a shop or premises and your phone goes, and it might be an important call. And if it is, I can say if it's really, really, really urgent, then obviously you can answer it. But just say, can I call you back in a few moments?
Yes.
Or if it's not urgent, let it go to answer.
If it is somebody you absolutely have to speak to, and there can't be too many people on that list, you just leave your shopping and you go outside and you take the call.
Exactly. That's what happens when the Queen phones you, Mike. You do the exact same thing.
Listen, if the Queen ever does phone me, I'll know it's because you've urged her to do so. But I have had one or two of those conversations with people who have rung me, either because I've been looking for them or something to do with this story, and people who are quite important ring you, and you think, well, I can't say I'll call you back because I really do have to take it. But then you just walk out of the place. And the same would be true. I mean, I would certainly put my phone on silent at a wedding. The reason why they're calling these things unplugged weddings is because it's become such a problem, I think. And there's a picture that's been doing the rounds of somebody having taken a picture of a married couple coming out of the church, and somebody's hand and phone is in front of the bride's sort of dress, covering half of it up.
Oh, I can actually tell you something even more shocking than that.
Can you?
A few weeks ago, I was at a friend's house, and right next to the house is the church, and there was a wedding taking place. I couldn't believe it. When the bride got out of the car, and the minister or the priest or the whoever was obviously conducting the service, he helped the lady out, which was lovely to see, and then produced a selfie stick.
No.
And then, yes, I promise you, and then took pictures with his selfie stick. I can't even tell you, I was so shocked. I was just looking, thinking, this just has to... And then I thought, maybe it's family. Mm. Maybe it's a family.
You must have been looking for smelling salts at that point.
Well, I needed more than smelling salts. I was reaching for whiskey and everything.
Right.
You know, it was just such a strange thing to see, and apparently he does it all the time. But that to me is just not the done thing.
No.
And as you said, if you're in somewhere, if I can give you an example, I'm at the very famous Gardens in Wales today, where they're doing some filming, I think the Antiques Roadshow, and I was inside, and when I knew I'll speak to you, I've come out, I'm going to the field, it's absolutely raining, so I'm absolutely soaked.
Oh, God, I'm sorry about that.
No, that's fine, because the point is I'm not interrupting other people where they're obviously enjoying the day. So if I can do it, I think everyone can do it, and I'm quite happy to stand in the rain and have a phone call. So
but this is the other thing that people do, which is really irritating, and it's not just necessarily taking a picture, but they don't put the phone on silent, so if they do take a picture, it makes a clicking sound, which isn't good.
Exactly.
Some of these maniacs who want to film everything, I mean, I've just, as a sort of exercise, and you might be shocked by this, I've opened up my phone. Do you know how many pictures I've got on my phone?
Probably going to say something like 10,000.
Yeah, very good, very good. 9,907.
Oh!
Right? 120 videos. I don't even know what they are. But, you know, people film things, but they then never look at it. I mean, if I filmed somebody's wedding, when am I ever going to look at that?
Yeah, well, see, this is the thing, and I'm, you know, I'll put myself in the same boat as you there, mate, because I do a lot of Insta stories, and I'm always doing little bits of filming. Mm. And then later on, it was only the other night, I thought, 700 videos? I thought, why have I got 700 videos? And it's all these little videos that we make, and you kind of think, what is the point? But at the same token, again, if you're at a ceremony, a wedding or something, I can understand people wanting to have a snap, a picture or a little bit of video of something to do with it, but not, I mean, it gets a bit silly and you can end up, you know, getting a bit carried away with your filming or taking your pictures. And as I said, there should be official photographers there, unless a bride and groom state, which does happen, they ask guests to take video and pictures instead of a photographer so they can make a kind of montage. I understand if somebody wants to do that, but if they haven't asked for that, just keep them out of sight.
Yes, exactly right. And what about the other part of sort of wedding etiquette that people always ask about, which is the gifting scenario? Because some people will have a list that you can go to and utilise. But is there a kind of inverted snobbery, or is there a sort of surprise that people get when they see just how much money you've spent? Because if you haven't spent very much, you maybe bought them a saucer rather than the big, you know, the casserole.
It's funny, I was asking my parents about this a few years ago, and I said, you know, with their wedding, which was back in the 70s, I said, how did it work with the guests? You know, with guests? How did you kind of ask for things? And apparently, back then, newly married couples would be moving into a home, hopefully together, and they would have a list of all the items, kind of things that they would need for the home. But they didn't necessarily give that list out. People would just automatically assume, and you might end up with three toasters and six kettles, apparently that's what could happen.
Right.
But it was the fact that people were good enough to spend what was within the budget. Where today, as you said, the problem is people kind of, I think they expect a bit too much sometimes. And and also, if you go to one wedding and you give somebody something maybe of a certain value, and you go to the friend's wedding and then you give them something less value, then it brings into question, why did they get that? Why did you spend more on them?
Right.
So it's a real minefield. And I think that when it comes to giving gifts, the most simplest thing is get something that you know that the other couple will appreciate, but don't go for budget. And even better, if you can make something, and I know people think, oh, I'm not going to go and do a Blue Peter. But say you're a carpenter or you've, I don't know, there might be something, you're an artist, there might be something you can actually make that's more personal. And I think that's quite nice, if you can. And if not, then just, obviously, just, you know the couple, hopefully, so you're getting something that you think that they will appreciate. But don't spend a fortune.
No, I think that's very good advice, as ever. Grant, thank you very much indeed. Grant Harrell, the Royal Butler, standing in a field, getting rained upon, because that's the kind of guy he is, and he doesn't want to upset anybody by talking loudly in a place where it shouldn't be done. You could take a very good large leaf out of his book. And if you are getting married this year, and if you are getting married in, or you're going to a wedding, don't go over the top. Don't take pictures. Many people are telling people, don't bring your phones. I remember the days when you'd have those portable cameras and disposable cameras that people would just put on tables, and you'd take a load of pictures while you were at the reception, and then they would get them all developed later on. I think that's a very good idea as well.
The Human Zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You know what to do, 0344 499 1000. Coming up, the Wine Bird is going to join us, who is also another friend of our show, likes to come on and talk about wine. Up in Sheffield, they're now making wine because they say that the northern part of this country has become a bit more like the Champagne region of France. It's getting hotter, and apparently that would be down to the climate change, of course. But if that means that in Sheffield they're making some rather nice rosé, then I'm all for it. And it's called Wine of England North. We'll be talking to Helena Nicklin about that and finding out just how good it actually is. Right now, though, we're going to go at the phones. Let's talk to Harry, who's in Portsmouth. Hello, Harry.
Oh, yes. Hello, Mike. I'm just thinking, you've got that klaxon because there's going to be a lot of very principled... Sorry, the train's just moving by. There's a lot of principled people coming and going in the next week or so.
Yes, well, you say principled, but I presume with your tongue firmly in your cheek, right?
Yeah, it's almost going out the side, actually. we've had...
there you go. There's one. That's just a test. Don't be alarmed. It's a shift-around alarm, that
I'm
one.
I'm sorry, I thought that was the train. My train's just whizzing sort of up the platform.
No, cool. Trains don't make that kind of noise in this country.
No, they don't.
No.
You've had Margot James just resign as digital minister. She should have resigned in the next week because... She messed up on the not knowing the Euro law about the new sort of porn standards coming in. She was admitting it yesterday.
Right, yeah.
Sorry.
This is the porn bar that never happened, right?
That's it. You've got it. They got a total mix-up. A woman who should know all the Euro regs because she's pro-Europe was caught out. And, of course, we've got Rory Stewart. He promised to resign as prisons minister.
Yes, he did, if it didn't solve the problem. Prisons are now in a worse state than they were when he took over.
No, he had some sort of confessional on the Monday, and on the Friday I'm watching Sky, where they've got five separate prisons around Britain that are in chaos, and this man on the Monday is claiming he solved the problem, so he's fine to be International Development Secretary.
Yeah, great, isn't it? I mean, I don't understand how these people continue to fail and yet continue to get rewarded for failure.
Well, there's one thing that's going to be fine. We're going to find out that Boris is going to get rid of a few of them.
I think so.
Whether they've got any principles or not.
Yes, well, I think that's right. That's why some of them will be resigning. Others will be just being fired because they haven't resigned in time. Some of them will be moved. And there will be a different sound for each of them, Harry. Thank you very much indeed. Let's talk to Susan, who's in Holland-on-Sea. Hello, Susan.
Oh, hello.
How you doing?
You were talking about this morning with the problems in areas around our country.
Yes.
I did phone up then, but my phone wasn't working properly, but I'm on the line now.
Yeah, that's okay. Don't worry. What's it like where you are then?
Well, I live in Holland-on-Sea, which is a little way from, you know, by car, Clacton.
Right.
Clacton-on-Sea. I work in Clacton, but anyway, we've had some very nasty things happening all within about a week and a half of one another.
Uh-huh.
We've had two murders.
Really?
Yes, honestly. If you look online, the Clacton Gazette, you can see yourself, Mike.
Okay.
You can see, yeah. And also, when I was on holiday, there was a lady that was hit over the head in the street and she's got a fractured skull.
Goodness,
I don't know
me.
What it's about. It mentioned all this is in the paper.
Mm.
And also, a new thing that's come out, that I read today. There's a baby that was taken to hospital. Unfortunately, it's died, and they've got inquiries going on, and that happened in the Clacton area. I know they're all different, but we have certainly had a lot of things like that going on, with the murders as well.
Yeah, do you feel sort of like it's getting more dangerous, do you think?
Well, I personally think it's got worse, OK? Yesterday, I'm not mentioning names here, but I was walking to work yesterday, and a man was on his mobile phone outside a building where you get your money from and everything.
Yeah.
And he was absolutely going berserk. He was shouting and swearing on this phone. And I was a bit concerned. I could hear other people talking about it in the street and everything. And at the end of the call, he said, "I'm in Clacton." And then he told the person, he said, "I'm not in a good frame of mind at the moment," but the language is appalling. He was really shouting out.
That's awful,
isn't
it?
And he told the person to F off on the phone. I don't know if he's been reported at all, but I could hear a lot of other shoppers talking about it, you know.
It's really, there's a breakdown in sort of just general civility, I think.
Well,
people are just not nice to one another.
Well, what I'm wondering is, and I'm not an expert on this field or anything, I'm wondering if some individuals have got a lot of problems, like you get everywhere in life. There's something gone wrong. I really can't understand this, Mike, but I had to call you.
Yes.
But if you look in the paper, online, Clacton Gazette, you can just see what's happening.
Yes, and I think it's happening in a lot of other places, Susan, as well. Thank you so much for your call. Susan in Holland-on-Sea, which is, by the sounds of it, a fairly sleepy little town in Essex. But, you know, unfortunately, it is clearly a lot more kind of dangerous than it used to be. And I think this is going on around the country. And even if it's not more violent, it's much more rude. You might not think that's important. I happen to think it is important because where, rudeness begins, it sometimes ends with violence. It sometimes ends with people falling out, fighting each other. There's a lot of that going on. People are really, really aggressive now out on the streets. I mean, the number of times that just on a daily basis when you're walking around in London, that you can easily find yourself in some kind of conflagration with someone because they're so wound up about whatever it is that they're wound up about that they can't get off the train quick enough, or they can't get on the train quick enough, or they can't push past you quick enough. I mean, it really is a much more uncivil society that we're in now. And the problem with that is that it leads to things like what happened last night in Stevenage, where 17 people are in quite a serious condition because of these idiotic people racing cars illegally on the streets. It's ridiculous.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
It's 12:34. It's Friday. It's time for this.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Perrier Awards.
Now, I'm delighted to say that because of a certain absence today... we have a Perrier Awards with a twist, and instead of Con Mendes sitting in the chair, we have the delightful Marta Malagon. Marta, a very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon,
and
Mike.
Welcome to the Perrier Awards.
Welcome to the Perrier Awards,
which you haven't presented before, but I'm looking forward very much to you presenting them because I'm sure you'll present them better than Con does.
Well,
almost certainly.
I'll try my best.
Okay, so as tradition starts, you should really kick it all off and tell us precisely what's going on.
Okay, so...
Right.
Welcome to the Perrier Awards. This is where we go back over the past week of the so-called Independent Republic of Mike Graham and choose our favourite moments. And for the first time, as you said, hosted by me, Talk Radio's self-appointed Spanish Affairs editor and Con's other half behind the glass.
Yes, of course.
But only behind the glass.
Only behind the glass.
Let's make that clear.
Yes, of course.
Let's begin. As it's tradition, Mike, you win the first Perrier.
Thank you.
Here on the Independent Republic, as you all know, we cover a wide range of subjects. On Wednesday, Helen Natman of The Sun popped in to tell us why we're getting fewer hobnobs for the same prize.
Mm.
And congratulations, you win Presumption of the Week.
Presumably, the hobnob manufacturers have not yet come out with a statement or told us why they've done it.
Well, they have, actually.
Ah. I got that one wrong.
You did.
It is a bad presumption to make, actually, isn't it?
It is a bad presumption to make, but... Yeah, I mean, sometimes you get things right, sometimes you don't.
I can't always get everything right. No. I can't get everything right all the time.
But that's why we love you.
No, thank you.
Because you're only human, you know.
Yeah, I am. Just
about. Friend of the show and occasional Talk Radio presenter Andrew Walker joined us to tell us what a huge fan of Kate Winslet he is.
Mm.
And he provided the random fact of the week.
I come from a long line of committed breastfeeders. Apparently this is now a thing.
Well, I mean, 65% of the world are lactose intolerant.
There you go.
That did seem a bit random to me when he said that.
I thought, what?
65% of the world?
I think that's a bit too much.
That can't be true.
To be honest, I should have fact-checked this before I went there.
I don't think he's right about that.
I'll do that when when I get out. But
we'll
get
him. When he comes back on, we'll ask him another time.
Maybe we should, yeah. We should challenge him on it.
I think we should.
What are your sources? Have you checked? Have
lactose
you asked everyone?
Lactose intolerance, I'm sure, does not extend to 65% of the world.
No, that'd be too much, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway. Speaking of random things, you could have introduced this Kate Winslet story topic in many different ways. However, you choose to give us a bizarre piece of information. And thanks to that, listener Jason Barry wins Best Claim to Fame.
God, that's bad, isn't it? One of the worst songs of all time. One of the worst films of all time. But actually, very popular, very, very successful. And whenever it comes on, you just watch it, don't you? Titanic, right? Here's a bit of bizarre information for you. There's a guy by the name of Jason Barry who listens to this show, listens to me, listens to this station, and has listened to me for many, many years. He's the guy, when they're standing waiting to try and evacuate the ship, says, "There are women and children down here." And he's in Titanic. He actually texted me, right, the very same day, saying, "I laughed out loud in the car when I heard my name on your show after you destroyed My Heart Will Go On." So he heard it as well, which was good.
That was good. And also, I've got to say, it's a great song. I don't know why you hate it so much.
Well, it's just that I've heard it so much, I think. You know, my daughter, who you know, loves Titanic. It's still her favourite film from the age of seven. Yeah. And whenever it's on, she has to watch it. And so I think it's partly because I've been ruined by her continued and absolute slavish devotion to it. And I'm sort of over it.
Well, we'll make sure we don't play that song every other week now.
Thank you very much.
We'll try our best. Now, let's go back to the conversation you had with Helen Knappman, because it moved on.
Yes.
And you ended up discussing toilet paper. And thanks to
that,
you won Backtracked of the Week.
I mean, you've got to be a pretty sad individual to count the number of sheets on a toilet roll.
Yeah,
you?
Although I actually did have to do that for a separate story a few weeks
ago. Yeah, I think for work it's acceptable. But I think if you're doing it just because you want to make sure you're getting value for money, perhaps not. That's fair enough. If she has to do it for work.
Yes.
Doesn't make her a sad individual.
But I think the lesson to learn here is maybe not to judge people who count.
That's very true.
Toilet paper.
I never thought I'd fall prey to that particular problem, to be honest, you know. I mean, who knew? Two things that I assumed in that one interview that I got completely wrong. She was too much of an expert. I don't think we want her back, do we?
No, we do.
No, we do. She is. Because, you know, we do like Helen.
This week has been really good for you, actually. We've got another Perry Award for you.
Excellent. I'm winning a lot this week. I like this. This is already better than Con Mendes' Perry Awards. I'm winning more.
Thank you very much. We've been talking a lot about the BBC licence fee.
Yes.
And whether it should be scrapped or not. And as always, you've got a very strong opinion about it. In fact, so strong that you gave us the ruthless moment of the week.
I don't want to pay for some podcast to be produced for people in India. I don't want to pay for an entire operation being run on the online business of the BBC. I don't even want to pay for local radio stations either, by the way. Let them run on their own. Let them make their own money. Let them be self-sustaining. And if they can't be, then let them die.
Let them die.
This is why they don't put me in charge of anything anymore.
No, I don't think, and this is why maybe you won't work at BBC anytime soon. Because you'll be like,
no, I don't think they're looking for people like me at the BBC, to be honest.
Well, speaking of someone who I think has worked for the BBC, I might be wrong now. Former newspaper editor and regular commentator Paul Connew joined us to talk about climate change. But what we never thought would happen is that he would end up winning the Perry Award for Hash Comment of the Week.
Well, I mean, when you've got somebody like Theresa May committing us to be zero carbon emissions by 2050 and causing a £3 billion black hole in our economy, I think that worries me far more, to be honest.
Well, you know, but you're not going to be around when climate... Well, you might be.
Well,
when climate change really, really... Well, OK.
Very kind. You just killed me off live in a typical lefty.
But you might be in a care home by then.
Yeah, I mean, he really was quite ruthless. You thought my ruthless moment was bad.
That was harsh. But
he's older than me as well.
You might be in a care home. Yeah. You might not be dead. You might be in a care home.
That's something to look forward to.
It is. But don't worry. Because,
I'll be ringing the show. Don't worry.
Oh, please do. Please do. We'll be here. Hopefully.
Hopefully.
But as I was saying, do not worry, because if there's something we know about you, is that you can take a harsh comment, you can take criticism,
true,
and in fact, you are your best cheerleader, Congratulations, you win Narcissist of the Week.
Oh, great. They're talking about the world's most admired men and the world's most admired women. Quite a surprising list for me, actually. But maybe there's a few people on there who you think shouldn't be. And also, perhaps, there are people that should have been on there that weren't. Like me, for example. There is a certain tongue-in-cheek narcissism, of course, which is what I practice.
Well, yeah.
I don't really want people to think that I really think that I should be on the world's most admired list, but I just think they would get upset at the fact that I think I should be on it.
I think, because I've got lots of spare time at the moment.
Have you?
Yes, I do.
That's what happens when you produce the show.
Exactly. Oh, hush. I'm going to start a campaign, and next year we're going to get all ourselves to nominate you.
Well, listen, if Vladimir Putin can make the most admired list, it's surely just a matter of numbers. It's just about arithmetic,
isn't it? Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's about,
Just get a load of Russian bots to vote for me.
Yeah, or maybe, we'll get people in the office to do it.
Yes. Several times.
Yeah, you've got contacts in America as well. We'll get people from all over the world to do it. We'll get you on that list.
Good idea. Thank you.
It'll be really good PR for Talk Radio. Mm. Caller Garrett in Spitalfield. He rang in to speak about
There, you've done it. It's the Con Mendez curse. The curse of the Perrier Awards.
I'm gonna start again,
Okay, go on.
Caller Garrett in Spitalfield rang in to speak about Extinction Rebellion.
Well done.
Yes. He's a busy man, though. And this week he claims the Perrier for best time management.
I believe that more than I believe all, obviously, all the government rubbish. But anyway, I'm going to go, Mike.
All right, Gary, appreciate your call. Thank you very much indeed. Gary's a bit busy. Well, it's fine, though. He managed to squeeze in a quick call to us, he said. Yeah, very nice.
I love that.
Thank you.
I love it when they do that.
I've got to go. A bit busy. Well, I wasn't going to ask you anything else anyway. You rang me.
Doesn't matter.
No, it was very good.
Anyway, another one for you, Mike.
Yes.
This week has been one of many, many changes. And sometimes, bless you, you can't keep up with all of them. Here's a wrong namer of the week.
0344 499 1000 is the number. Let's get some news headlines with Rachel Jewell.
Talk Radio, half-hour headlines.
Good morning.
Let me explain.
Yeah, voice has gone a bit deeper, hasn't it?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Because, in fact, that was not Rachel Jewell. That was actually James Lure, the latest addition to the Independent Republic's pool of
newsreaders. And that was his first day, so naturally I forgot his name.
It was his first day.
Yeah.
But, he's one of us now. And to welcome him to the show, James, you win mispronunciation of the week.
Mr. Musk claims the device called Neuralink would attempt telepathy.
That's great. Telepathy.
Listen, it happens to the best
Sounds
of
like
us.
Something you get in a Greek restaurant, doesn't it?
Telepathy. Yeah.
Do you want some telepathy with that?
We'll check that one out as well. Now, you'll remember political editor Ross Kemsel from when we had some fun with the resignation klaxons earlier this morning.
Yes, indeed.
There's the one. Ross has become a regular in the Perry Awards for many different reasons. But this one, Mike... it's just nuts.
Bringing up a recent report into the Labour Party. So this is a real testy stuff from Theresa May.
Testy?
Whatever that means.
Yeah, testy, yeah. He did a good one today as well, actually, but
it was
probably too late to include. I can't remember, it was something and something, but it sounded a bit strange. We'll have to go back over it.
Ross is one of those people that sometimes he says really strange things on the radio.
Yes.
And we just go with it because he's got editor in his title and just we assume that
he
knows.
Well, of course, he does. Yeah. Well, he's a very smart man.
He's a very clever man.
And we've got a big week coming up. He says he's not going to sleep all weekend. So that's going to be difficult for him on Monday, I would imagine.
Yeah. Oh, well, we'll see. Finally, last pair of this week. As you all know, Alistair Stewart has been sitting in for Julia Hartley Brewer for most of the week while she went on a much-deserved holiday somewhere in the EU. Breakfast is a fast-paced show, and sometimes things go a little bit wrong when this happened. Alistair gave us the apology of the week.
Talk Radio Breakfast with Alistair Stewart in for Julia Hartley Brewer with The Times. Be well informed.
Welcome back. It is 7:48 now. And yes, I know it is the 16th of July. I apologise profusely. One of my notes from my briefing overnight had the 17th written upon it, and I apologise profusely. It is Tuesday, the 16th of July.
Dear me. Imagine reading the wrong date.
Always blame the producers, I would say.
The Perrier Awards on Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
I don't care if Monday's blue, Tuesday's grey and Wednesday too. Thursday, I don't care.
Matthew Wright coming up at 1 o'clock. Of course, the rain is falling in London, unfortunately, because, of course, it's the start of the summer holidays. Extinction Rebellion is still wandering about on various bridges around London. How about this for a tweet from them? The rain is a sign of things to come. The climate emergency is upon us. No, the rain is actually a sign that it's raining. That's what we do when we have a climate which actually has rain and clouds and sun and wind and sometimes snow as well. What do you call that? A sign of things to come as well. I'll tell you what's going on in the north of England, particularly up near Sheffield, is they're growing wine, because they're saying that the climate now in Sheffield is a little bit more like the climate in Champagne in France. So we have to talk to the one person who's an expert in all of this stuff. It is, of course, Helena Nicklin, the wine bird, star of The Three Drinkers, columnist, wine connoisseur, friend of the show. Helena, very good afternoon to you.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Very well indeed. Who needs Chablis when there's Chateau Sheffield, is what it says in the Daily Mail. Is it any good? I've had some lovely wines from Kent. I've had some lovely sparkling wines from the West Country. I haven't had anything from Sheffield before.
Well, you know, the headline is kind of half right. English wine is doing really, really well. And there have been vineyards in the north of England for absolutely ages.
Really?
Around Sheffield, yeah. North Yorkshire, Rydale, Leventhorpe, really good. So, and climate change is definitely helping the English wine industry massively.
Well, I mean, there's got to be a couple of pluses, haven't there? I mean, it doesn't look very nice out there at the moment, and the Extinction Rebellion people are all getting soaked. But, I mean, one of the guys that we're talking about here, Kieran Atkinson, has said that they produce something like 10,000 bottles a year from quite a small vineyard in northern Derbyshire. I mean, are they marketing it properly if I haven't heard of it? Because I do buy quite a lot of wine.
Well, do you know what? I don't know them either, and I'm a wine writer, so yeah. I obviously need to get in touch with Kieran and try the wines. I'm going to head up to Yorkshire fairly soon to do some tasting, so I can get a real handle on this. But he is right, and they are right to be planting more vineyards up there. The climate change, it's more apparent at the moment down south.
Yeah. Because,
you know, it's that slight increase in temperature coupled with that chalk that is in the same vein as the Côte de Blanc in Champagne has made sparkling wine down there suddenly really, really good.
Well, yes, and I'm hearing as well, and you can confirm, I'm sure, that an awful lot of French vineyards are now buying land in England, or in the southeast of England anyway, to market their own champagne.
Absolutely. Tatton just been down there. I helped plant some vines a couple of years ago. They've just bought a whole load more land to build more. Pommery's down there too. And there are a couple of others as well, like looking to buy.
Yeah. And it's quite expensive, isn't it, English sparkling wine? But it's pretty good, I would say. It's definitely improved from what it used to be.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it has. I think that the jump in quality of the last 10 years has been incredible. And so people have realised that this is a place to start planting. The problem is it's really expensive to make and it takes ages. You can't sell. It takes 3 years before the vine is even ready to harvest. And then you've got to age sparkling wine for at least 18 months and usually more. You know, it's a really expensive process, which is why it has to be so pricey.
And it says here the British wine industry produced 15.6 million bottles last year. I mean, that's verging upon a pretty big business, isn't it?
It broke all records, yeah. It's really exciting. I mean, this is the place to watch for sparkling wine, the UK, for sure. Down south particularly, but not the north will be following the footsteps. Eventually,
yeah.
it might just take a tiny bit longer. But there's still wine up there. It's getting better and better.
And are they sort of selling most of it here? Are they exporting it? Where's it all going?
A lot of it is sold in the country because they don't make huge amounts. Although some of the larger producers down south have started exporting. You can see some of these in the States now and elsewhere. And we'll be seeing a lot more, all around the world, really soon, as production increases.
And how do the French take to being offered English wine? I can't imagine they like it very much.
They're not very happy, no. I have been in the presence of many a French person who's like, what is this? But the savvy ones listen. And the really savvy ones invest.
Right. Because, of course, with the big dreaded B word, which we haven't had really, you and I talked about, I mean, if it was to come to a no-deal Brexit, we could just drink English wine, right, if we had to.
Well, I mean, that is one plus, I guess. It can't really hurt the industry as far as that's concerned. But there are so many wines to drink. You want to drink them from everywhere, too.
I do, yeah, absolutely. I do not wish to be limited. I'm in no way suggesting that. We'll have to get you in with something akin to whether it's English or French or Chilean or whatever it is you're up to. Where have you been recently that you were impressed with?
Let's see. Recently. I've been sort of working on the next series of The Three Drinkers, so we've been working on that mostly. But
This is your TV show on Amazon, right?
Yes, that's right. We're actually going back up to Scotland in September to film two more episodes.
Are you still doing whiskey, or are you doing other things?
Well, that's the whiskey, but we're planning a very big series for next year.
Oh, good.
I will tell you about as soon as I'm allowed to.
Yes, well, certainly. We don't want you giving anything away. Well, listen, Helen, we'll see you soon. As soon as the weather improves, we'll get you in and we'll have some nice wine tasting on the terrace, perhaps, here at Talk Radio. Helen and Nicola in the Wine Bird and star of The Three Drinkers, which is a great show, actually, all about three people driving around Scotland tasting whiskey. How bad could your life be? Meanwhile, if you're going away on holiday, enjoy yourselves. Don't forget, you can still listen to Talk Radio no matter where you are, as long as you've got a phone, as long as you've got the app, as long as you've got some kind of Wi-Fi signal, you can listen. I'll be back at 1 o'clock. It's going to be a massive week next week, don't forget. A blockbuster week, according to Ross Kempsall. We're going to have people resigning, people getting fired, people changing jobs, new political leaders. It's going to be amazing, and it's all coming up next week.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Gray. On Talk Radio.
So if you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1 Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.